In this episode of the Critic Corner, I am joined by my friend Russell to discuss all things Nolan. And I told him we got the daunting task of ranking Nolan's top 10 films. And this is what we came up with.
Okay. No, yeah, like I was saying, like I went through the IMDb and I was like, damn, there's so many good films. I was like, I feel bad having some of these at the bottom. But I don't know. I think that's just like, it's a testament, you know? Like, I actually did have to think about this, so
right.
This is awesome.
You know, that's actually but really cool.
Just to let you know, Inception number one, I had to.
Dude, I have no prejudiced position. In fact, what I do with this list, I don't even count the Batman trilogy. Like, that's a little bit to the side. I mean, it's groundbreaking.
That's harder,
but it's like, dude, or else I'm going to have to put a Dark Knight on every single list. Like, I'm sorry.
Yeah, I feel like Batman, Dark Knight has to hit like certain beats, or like has to do like certain things. Whereas you know his actual like in original films can act like really, I don't know. You just can get creative and go where he wants, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Like there's no fanboy appeasement. There's no like nothing. It's just him and like how cool can he like make a story?
And that exactly it. You just said it. You hit the nail right on the head. Doesn't have to appease the fanboys, but the thing is that he understands that and just feeds it to them and like look for the Easter eggs. But that's also because he had David S. Goyer working on with Batman Begins and The Dark Knight. But then Dark Knight Rises, it was just the Nolan brothers. And a little bit of a side note, this is hilarious, man. Once the whole it looked like the federal government was in a order to shut down of the entire country for COVID, so I was already lining up movies that I wanted to watch. And for some reason, I had an itch to watch like military-themed films. So the wife was like, oh, yeah, I still want to watch military movies too. So the first one we kicked off was American Sniper. But as I was loading American Sniper because the Wi-Fi was slowing down, I was burning time watching The Dark Knight Rises. But not like in a sequence. I literally pulled up the part where Bane takes over. And I was telling the wife, I'm like,
just like YouTube clips, yeah.
No. It was because I have the Blu-ray. So I was telling the wife because she's like, "Can you lower the volume on?" I was like, "Honey,
yeah." I mean, me too. But I was like, "You don't want to put it in."
yeah. But I was telling the wife, like, "Honey, the reason I'm watching this is because this might be America pretty soon." She's like, "Come on, just turn it off."
Dude, I watched the movie last week, last week I watched it. And I was like, damn, I was like, this is crazy. I know it was supposed to be like kind of like, what is it, Wall Street? You know?
No, it wasn't.
It had that little vibe going on. Well, but I feel like I mean, obviously it didn't like, I feel like it kind of coincided. It wasn't really like cause and effect. But I feel now like rewatching the film, over the last week.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, damn, there's like so much more going on that it's like related to the movie or like, I don't know, just like in terms of, you know, stock manipulation, like that happened. And I was like, wow, like,
oh, dude.
Like, I don't know. It was just, it was a good movie. But Bane, I still love Bane. He's the best part of it for sure.
Oh, of course. Just that they had to make Tom Hardy look taller for that. Well, since we're already diving into this thing, so to get it segue. For those of you joining us, I got Russell Lee Rum Pirate. I never understood where you got that from, but he's joining me to talk all things Nolan with Tenet coming.
Is this
out.
Like a?
Mm-hmm.
Oh yeah, I'm so excited for Tenet. I'm so excited for Tenet. Like, can't wait.
Yeah. So.
Yeah.
Let's tackle this thing. So before we start like geeking out all over this thing, let's hold off on. We already waited a little bit on the whole Dark Knight trilogy, but we'll come back to that just because there's a lot of real world implications in it. Let's deal with what is actually Nolan. So if it's actually Nolan, we got in order of release, we got Following, Memento, Insomnia, The Prestige, Inception, Interstellar, Dunkirk, and Tenet. So that's 8 films, not counting any short films or documentaries or TV shorts, anything that he's done, and not counting the Dark Knight trilogy. Otherwise, that would make it 11 films, and that means one movie can't make a top 10 list, which is to say impossible, but That's just what it would come down to. So
Honorable mention.
let's talk strictly Nolan stuff, not established stuff. Let's kick it off and we'll take it that
Okay,
way, because
cool.
you said you had a hard time building this list. So how did you rank on a top 10 best Nolan films? How'd you rank him without seeing Tenet?
Without seeing Tenet, I rank them. Well, I included the Dark Knight trilogy, just because it is a film, and making a film for fanboys and a fandom has its own challenges. So I think that has to come into consideration. So I had ranked number one, Inception. I think it like it was right after Dark Knight, I believe.
Yeah, it was.
So to me, that was like. I mean, that was his, apex filmmaking like prowess right there. And I don't know. I mean, it's hard for me to choose between Dark Knight and Inception, but just Inception. I saw that movie like 5 times in theaters, and like to be honest, it's like the last movie that I've been like obsessed with. Like the ending for the movie was so powerful, but what made it great was everything that came beforehand, like if the movie sucked and then the movie ended in spinning top, you'd be like, what? That's bullshit, like whatever, But the fact that Cobb was great, it was hilarious, like, dude, amazing special effects, amazing camera work. It all built up to like an amazing end. And like, sometimes films ending ambiguously can, deter. They're like, oh, it's a cheap way out, but in this instance, I think Inception like really earned it, and so it really throws it back to the hands of the audience, which is what the director wants to do, and so to me, that's why Inception is number one of his films. I just feel like I had the most sort of invested into it, and I really like poured into it, and yeah, it was great. I
That
love it.
was, yeah, I could definitely weigh in on that some more, but I want to hear your next one. What's your next one after Inception?
After Inception, The Prestige.
Aha.
I got The Prestige. So, come on, the ending, dude, I was so confused. Like, it was one of the movies you had to rewatch. Even though it was like Memento did that too. To me, Prestige with Christian Bale and like Hugh Jackman, they played like great roles,
Oh
especially like rivals and like friends or whatever, like amazing. Also David Bowie was in it, so shout out to David
yeah.
Bowie, RIP.
Jeez.
He's
RIP,
like
man.
the best Tesla ever for sure.
He's
And
the
then
only
just
guy I think of when
I
it
don't know,
comes to
man, I
Tesla.
love the dude. Exactly, he's the only Tesla besides the actual Tesla. Okay. So after Prestige, I have Memento. Memento, honestly, it's the film that kind of introduced me, or that, like, I think you introduced me
I
to
did.
it, pretty sure. It was crazy. Like, dude, first time I finished watching it was like, I've never seen a movie where I was, like, confused. Not confused, but like, wait, I think I need to watch this again. Like, not because you want to watch it again, not because you didn't understand it or anything like that. I just felt like it was such a subtle movie that I'd never really experienced like a film like that before. So it really opened my eyes to what like filmmaking can be and what like directors could do with like certain projects, so definitely Memento for that reason. I still sort of prefer Prestige just overall, but Memento for sure had that first like impact,
Hey, dude,
it was great.
you have a solid top three right there, and I don't think I'll be able to last halfway before just chiming in on all this. So let's take these top three and then continue working our way down
No,
there
do it,
after.
do it.
When, because it basically builds the repertoire of Nolan himself, where we have his most standout is Inception, just because 10 years later, definitely. More people are talking about that and completely forgot such a thing as Avatar existed. So the only reason anybody might talk about Avatar is because the long-awaited, and I use quotation marks for that, long-awaited sequels. I don't know who the hell's been asking for it, but whatever. So Inception is one of those. It's kind of like a film study because I guess the whole concept of it is told immediately in the beginning. He is using visual aids to train the audience on how to watch his movie. He's like, there is time differences here. You need to understand. So every time there's a shift from the dream stage to the supposed state that they're supposed to be in, but it's actually another dream with because it was a dream within a dream, to then come to the reality in playing with that time frame, and you never see anything like that. It's like, the heck am I watching? But he's already showing you with the clock slowing down, speeding up between the scenes. You're like, huh? And then later on, of course, with Arthur, played by Jordan Golson-Levitt, explaining that very concept, it was showing people that, holy smokes, this is the most explanatory as an instructor as Nolan gets, because he's the magician in The Prestige. He is the psychiatrist in Memento.
Yeah.
So he's the science instructor or the physics instructor in Inception. That's why I'm taking all three. Like, I love how you ranked them. For personal preference, I might move one a little bit, but I'm actually going to leave it just like that, mostly because of the impact it's had on cinema just by virtue of those three. Inception is Nolan totally being able to do what he can envision when a studio trusts him fully, creative control, the money. And just like, all right, do what you're going to do, and then sit back and watch magic happen. Like, what just – do what? And you said – you didn't say visual
effects. Yeah, like, that's the hardest thing to do, you know?
Yeah, you didn't say
visual effects. Like, getting all the trust, getting all that, you know?
It's like, what the flip, man? The movie itself is jaw-dropping. But The Prestige being above Memento, The Prestige is him being able to do the – I guess you could say as close to an independent film as it gets – but like the last independent so-called film, and the truest Nolan movie, I'd say, because that was the last time he used David Julian as his composer. That was like signature sound Nolan.
Before it switched to Hans Zimmer,
Before Hans Zimmer took over, right? Because they ended up hitting
stride. Before he went Hollywood.
before he went Hollywood. But The Prestige, just like Inception, that took like 7 or 9 minutes for him to explain the concept. He tells you without saying anything, and until he does, just pulls the wool over your eyes. When he says, are you watching closely? He told you the movie already. He told you. Mm-hmm. And you don't grasp it until maybe the second viewing. It's like, oh, snap. It's like when you finally see it. Like,
and you're like, oh, wait. Then you're like, spoiler warning, bro. You're like,
yeah. Yeah. It's like he just literally told you.
I just love the way you can play with that. Delicate is, you know, like, it's so obvious to give it away if you were like a lesser filmmaker, but the way he like danced around it and built it and revealed all that in the end was like great, you know. It's like fucking work of art.
And Memento, which still to this day stands out, a movie that he did 20 years ago but didn't see a U.S. release until March 2001, I think. And if I remember correctly, 2001 was a horrible year for cinema. For whatever reason, one of the only standout blockbusters that summer was Shrek. But one of the films that mainstayed was...
What year was it?
2001. The movie came out in 2000, but it's an import. Because it was released in the UK. So it was brought over here and distributed by, UK, I think it was New Market Films, something like that. So that was the studio that distributed it here.
Could that have been after like 9/11 or?
No. 9/11 right? Happens later. So all in all, 2001 was just a horrible year for the box office, as I remember.
Oh, it's just in general,
Yeah, in general. And then 9/11 happens later in the year, so that made it worse. But it recovered just a little bit in the winter because of two little movies called Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone, The Lord of the Rings, The Fellowship of the Ring, and Monsters, Inc. So those three came out afterwards. So it's like, what? It came out in the worst of times, but it, you know, we needed a distraction.
The worst,
and 24 for TV, man. That's when it all started for me. But anyway, Memento had staying power. And I think it was due to the fact that people were like you, like me, were like, what did we just see? It wasn't a movie. It was a case study that demanded you to go back to see it. And the more and more I watched it, the more and more it peeled layers to understand it. So there was, you were truly studying something, which is why Memento, of everything
Right,
he's
like the
done.
first, like the first movie I ever had to actually like really study and like, you know, watch frame by frame and like what is being intentionally shown and what isn't, and like, you know, dissecting a film essentially, like, which is amazing, bro. It should be like a study course.
And it
If
is
anything.
some schools are teaching Memento, and they have to, and that's how incredible
Wow, that's
Nolan
cool.
is as a director, to in such a handful of films, quite literally, in such a small amount of time, to leave that kind of impact. Because Memento, and it was the time that you watched it. I don't remember who else was watching it. It might have been Brian or someone else, someone that we know, that was watching it with you. And I had stepped out of the room, and I stepped in towards the end of the film, and then I'm watching it, and they're like, "Holy smokes, I had missed that!" And I've seen the movie like so many times for like 4 years. And then at that moment, that precise screen grab, I saw the movie in a whole new light. That it's just like, it was amazing that it was a movie that kept changing my experience every time I watched it. That's why I hold such a special place in my heart for how incredibly complex, how incredible the movie is, and how Guy Pearce just carries the thing. It's just such a standout film. I absolutely love it. And it's film noir. I'm a sucker for film noir, man. So that thing is just incredible, incredible. I love the ranking you made. It's not my personal ranking, but I respect the ranking because there's no way I could say you're wrong, because I can also say yeah, because what would be your number four on that list?
right, let me see.
Because remember, we
So
said
number
that
four, I
we're moving
have
aside the Dark Knight
Insomnia.
trilogy. We're moving aside the Dark Knight trilogy. So,
Not counting, no Dark Knight.
okay.
So, No Dark Knight, after Memento, I have Insomnia.
Insomnia.
I think it's a amazing thriller.
It's
Al
a remake.
Pacino, I think just more notably, Robin Williams,
Dude.
amazing. Like, I think that was one of the first films I had seen of him that wasn't like a comedy or whatever. And,
Scared the
like,
bejesus
bro,
out
it
of you.
totally shifts my perspective on, yeah, exactly. I was like, and I love the setting. You know, you're in Alaska. You know, the sun doesn't set. You can't sleep. Like, what does that do to you? You know, what does that do to your mind? I thought it was a great sort of concept for a film, for a thriller film. You know, a mystery. Like, how are you gonna like stop something when you literally can't even sleep on it? You know, like your mind is always gonna be thinking about it. It's crazy. It's a crazy thing to think about. You know, you think about detective movies, soft. Dark,
That's
soft
true.
shadows, you know,
Yeah.
silhouettes, but no, bro, this is, you know, white blindness and like crazy. It's awesome. I love it. I love it. So I don't think it gets enough props, but I would say Insomnia after Memento.
Yeah, and for expanded commentary on that, it's the first movie he does with Warner Brothers. I don't know, well, based on the film itself, because it was critically loved, and of course, those that watched it just enjoy it. But I ask myself, if I were one of the studio executives and saw this young talent do this, what made me believe? Here you go. Here are the keys to the most prized franchise of Warner Brothers, Batman. And we trust you to reboot this thing. Because the next Batman movie was supposed to come out in 2001. Never happened. It doesn't come out in 2005. Completely reimagined, completely
Five,
redone,
right.
and grounded in reality with a new guy that literally up to that point no one's ever heard of. No one really saw Memento. And more people did see, but was still considered like an independent or one of those like films that like, you missed it, too bad, you don't have to see it in the theater kind of thing with with Insomnia. Then his next movie is Batman Begins. Huh? It's like, that's not really heard of,
Breaks
man.
through.
And then what happens? He follows
A
that up
little
with Prestige.
insight on, you know, Yeah. Just, I think one thing that Ethan, like you said, you know, what made them give him the keys, I think was one, you know, he made a great film. You know, sometimes whether the film makes money or not, you know, producers, people will know that, hey, this is actually a good film. You know, sometimes it just didn't work out in the box office. Two, you know, he worked with two big stars, you know, Al Pacino, Robin Williams, and he made a great movie with both of them. So it shows that he can work with, you know, stars. Star power, you know, that might just be another reason. And so I think you've said something like this. If it was more like a proving ground, you know, if he could make this film a success, you know, I think that would like give them the okay to, you know, hand him the keys to Batman and the Batmobile.
Yeah, I know. Because I was against Batman Begins. And dude, he made a believer out of me, to say the least. And like, dude, you brought him to life. Thank you. So what's after Insomnia for you?
Okay, so after Insomnia, I have Dunkirk. So I have Dunkirk because, you know, I'm a big history fanatic. I love World War II, so I'm glad he made like a World War II film.
Yeah.
I'm also like a very like visual person, and like I feel like to me, this is like you really have to pay attention to, you know, the actual like screen. Like to me, I kind of regard it as like his silent film because there's
Yeah,
not a lot of dialogue going
totally.
on. And I think these days, and an experience I had was like people sort of like, you know, maybe didn't really like connect with it too much because there's not enough dialogue. I think that's just how movies are these days. But I just love that he was able to make a film like that and still have it be so compelling, you know?
I am looking for this edit of Dunkirk. It's basically someone turned Dunkirk into about a 10-minute short film in black and white, silent. But they use the music, and dude, it's brilliant because that's exactly what
Yeah.
Nolan was
Well,
aiming for. I just can't find it unless it was
right.
taken down for copyright,
Like a
but
modern silent film. Yeah.
yeah,
We'll
not
find it. We'll
like
find
The Artist, which was the
it.
true one, right? But this one in particular,
Right.
Dunkirk is one of those movies I think I enjoyed more at home than I did at the theater. Because the thing is, that thing was
Yeah.
cranked up to the nth degree with the sound mixing. I couldn't hear a damn thing. I'm like, I'm sorry, man, this Hans Zimmer music is not working for me. It's the most atrocious soundtrack I've heard in the context of what was being done. Because I'm sorry, man, the Thin Red Line is my jam. So like, that's what I was hoping for. I'm like, what is this? It was
They're
too
not, yeah,
distracting.
it's cool. They're not off home runs, you know? Like, that's so funny because that kind of adds on to what my list was like.
Why it knocks it down, you mean?
Listening to that. Yeah, well, why Dunkirk was up there? Well, to me, Dunkirk was more a visual film than musically. Like, I think it's like one of his prettiest films, especially because it's so, you know, you're stuck in World War II, so it's like very natural, you know? It's like, dude, he really pulled this off, like, practically, like, as much as he could have, you know, and like, I don't know. I don't think we've ever seen a World War II film like that.
No.
That's just like very steady focused. I don't know. Like the only thing that reminds me that has that sort of visual impact was like Saving Private Ryan, you know, something like that.
Yeah, except it was the opposite. It wasn't grainy, no shaky cam, and other stuff. It was more like you said, visually it
But it has
was.
that sort of like, yeah, in a different way, yeah.
And the storytelling component of it is just Dunkirk to me is a summation of everything Nolan was working towards. Because I have long said that I felt like every single movie he was doing was building upon himself and his strength to get better and better. So by the time he got to The Dark Knight Rises, because it was one of those behind the scenes shoots, because they filmed the portion where the police are going to make their charge at Bane for the final act. I remember seeing it because it was all over the place. Everybody on social media was posing because they were in their apartments. They just stuck their arms out like, oh, look at that. And they had like 2 to 5,000 NYPDs or people, some of them were real NYPD, other ones weren't, but they were having him charge down there with the pyrotechnics and the firecrackers and all that, and they say, all right, and cut, and that was like, dude, like, it looked to me, I'm like, okay, well, I haven't seen the movie, I'm like, Nolan is working towards his first epic, and he definitely was, because as soon as he was done with Dark Knight Rises and does, which I'm presuming is the next one on your list, Interstellar, I had said, okay, this is it. His next one is going to be a period piece, and it's going to be epic. Dunkirk. I was right. And our mutual friend Ernest, as he was the one that broke the news to me, he's like, the next title, Dunkirk. I'm like, I knew it! I knew it! I said he's going to do a World War II movie. I had told him that he's going to do a World War II movie. And then Dunkirk, he's like, boom! So it's like I was gauging him. I knew it! So that's why all these building blocks to what we'll ultimately get at with his upcoming film is how it's what I'm expecting because of what I know of him. But anyway, your next one after Dunkirk would be then? I think it's the only one left.
All right, so after Dunkirk, you already know. There's two left, but yeah. Interstellar. So Interstellar, great. One of his best, one of Hans Zimmer's best soundtracks, for sure, definitely. When I heard that in IMAX, when I saw that movie in IMAX, it was a whole different experience. Like, if I had to judge the films based on my experience of watching them in the theater, Interstellar would probably be, like, top three, like, honestly. Because watching that in IMAX was amazing. Like, when he went into the black hole, the music, when he's driving through the cornfield, and tears, like, flowing through his eyes. Because he's thinking of, like, his daughter, like, bro, and the music just blasts, bro, like the chairs just like almost like rocking out of your seat, like amazing experience. Like, that's what movies should be, you know, when you go to the movies. But, you know, when you see it at home, I feel like the movie loses some quality. Like, you know, it's not like my bad for not having a 70 millimeter screen at home, you know, but but it's still an amazing movie. But yeah, to me, it was more of a, you have to watch it in theaters type of experience. I feel like they probably will release it again at some point, probably like a 10-year anniversary or something.
Oh, they
and I will definitely go watch that.
Oh, heck yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And for the most part, it is a family-friendly movie. A few like under the breath, like bad words, but nothing really big. So that's why it's a PG-13 movie, and my kids have been watching it for years. They absolutely love that movie. But I'll chime in on that one afterwards, because we got one more on your list there at the bottom of your list, which is technically the bottom of the list would be like the top three on every other movie list out there. But go ahead with your last one.
Well, honestly, mine is just like following. I saw it probably like, you know, probably when I discovered Memento, and I was trying to see what else he had done. And I think, like, you know, Batman Begins is on the way. So, you know, it was a cool movie. I feel it was like a con, you know, a con man. Like, definitely, maybe I should rewatch it, give it another try. I mean, not that it was bad or anything, but
no, it's only an hour.
Just out of all the movies, these are just my personal. Yeah, exactly. So it's just like my personal preferences, and like, I don't know. For my list, I sort of also took into account what the challenges were going to be when he was making that film. Mm-hmm. And so that includes, you know, like studio pressure or, you know, fan appeasement or just originality, like what can you do next? But yeah, I think it's following is not a bad film at all. Like,
no,
I think it's a crazy, it's like the it is the mini Memento, you know, like it was just showing like little like spark of like what you're about to find, you know, like,
yeah, I think he only filmed it with two cameras and $6,000. Yeah. Yeah. So that was
awesome.
The thing
that's
that got
like
him noticed.
Great.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Yeah. And you know, it's just like, it's funny. I've been thinking, I was like following and Memento, I feel like would have done so much like better if it was like now, if it was on Netflix, like, bro, these would be like hits. I feel like they would be hits, totally. Like, for real. Like, if they were like, oh, Netflix original, like, I don't know, man. Like, I'm happy we live in this age where we can discover more artists that, you know, are going to make great films in the future. But you know, yeah, that's my
No,
list pretty much.
totally. And that basically wraps up the Nolan movies without counting the Dark Knight trilogy based on your list. And I'm not going to go one by one on my list without chiming in on yours. My list is basically the same as yours. Only one thing switches. And I'll expand on that commentary. So this is, I guess, where my turn is to chime in. I have to move Interstellar from your place all the way to first. It is, and I'll expand on why. It's Nolan's.
I told you, theater, you know, you watch that in 70 millimeter, you know, that's where you saw it the first time. That's first impression, you know, it's like, damn, everything
I'm with
hits.
you.
So I respect that.
only of his movies, I go watch it in IMAX. The thing is, Interstellar, in building, or I'm gonna rattle off the movies, his major movies in order of how he filmed them. Memento, independent film. Insomnia, his first Warner Brothers foray, small budget. Batman Begins, his first big budget. The Prestige, Dark Knight. Inception, Dark Knight Rises, Interstellar, Dunkirk, up-and-coming Tenet. Okay. When you watch him in that order, based on how he's built on his strengths, there's two things that I've always struggled with Nolan. One of them was finally solved in Interstellar, and the other was finally addressed in Interstellar. Even though it was not the answer I wanted. When you watch Memento, spoiler alert for people who don't realize that we're spoiling Nolan's movies. Come on, it's 20 years, you should have seen it by now. So the opening where Leonard kills Teddy, when we finally get to the grasp of that moment where he's saying, "You freak." That wasn't, oh my goodness, what's the actor's name? Joel something. I don't even think it's Joel anymore. Let me check. I want to get his name right. I have IMDb open, so I better know his name. Joe Pantolano. So Nolan struggled getting Joel to say it right. So eventually he gave up on Joel saying it right. They filmed it over and over again. So Nolan dubbed it. That's supposed to be Nolan's voice per the director's commentary. They said he couldn't get it right. So that to me started something
Oh, wow.
where I felt that for Nolan, what was very important was the sound mixing. How a movie sounded was very important to him. Real. And he even admitted that he cranked up some of the sound on purpose, which is why Dunkirk is atrocious when it comes to the music, but it channels what he was trying to channel. The absolute dread. You don't see it, but you feel it all the time. Like, oh, this is ever present. Yes, because the soldiers felt the same pressure. Like, okay, I get it. I'll let it slide in that respect, but I still hate Hans Zimmer's music. So, like, it's Submariner, whatever it is, maybe the end of it. But the thing is that's where I struggle with Nolan. But at that point, this is after Interstellar, I've learned to come to terms because he answered it with Interstellar. Batman Begins, I had issues with a lot of the dubbing. I'm like, I don't understand what some of these actors are saying. The Prestige, I looked back at my Critic Corner review that I did for it. I gave it like a B plus. I'm like, wow, I gave it such a low rating. And I remember why. Because of how I watched it, I didn't understand a damn thing that some of these actors were saying. And I thought, oh, it's where I was sitting. So when I saw it again, I'm like, no, this is the movie. So when I saw it at home, and the wife loves to watch it with subtitles, like, okay, I'll watch it with subtitles. It actually clarified some scenes, like, hey, wait a minute. So they
Hey,
didn't say what
subtitle for the win, bro. Don't hate on subtitle.
Hey, I watched the OG on anime, man. Leave it in Japanese. That's how I'll take it. But that was the thing. It's like, okay, so it's the sound mixing where I was having issues with. You still run into some of that in the Dark Knight, Inception. Yeah, there's a lot of things where, like, oh my goodness, some of these things need subtitles, bro. So when it got to the Dark Knight Rises, at that point, I just accepted it. So I'm like, I understand you cannot understand Bane in the Airplane, but the dubbing that they did from the IMAX release to the actual release, the new version is horrible. Bring back the old IMAX. I have the original audio. I even mixed it for myself. If I'm incriminating myself, I'm not sharing this movie with anybody. All I did was just take the IMAX recording, mixed it over the original beginning so I don't have to hear the atrocious sound mixing. So I'm like, dude, Nolan, get it right. Interstellar comes along. And the sound mixing, he finally addresses it because he cracks that up. That music is freaking loud, but that music is a character of the movie. And the music, like you said, I would probably put it in the top three soundtracks Hans Zimmer's ever done. Number one, Thin Red Line, not going to change. And Interstellar has to be in that conversation. The other one, it's tough. I have a soft spot for The Prince of Egypt because unforgettable, but we'll see. Anyway, the thing is, Matthew McConaughey had the same problem that Christian Bale had in the first Batman movie. He mumbled a lot, but that was on purpose. But at least for the most part, I understood Matthew McConaughey. So like, at least I understood him. So when I watched it with subtitles at home, I got more of it. Okay, yeah, I get it. And I have zero issues with that because Nolan said, I did it on purpose. It's like, yeah, but the music gets so loud, you can't hear the actors. I did it on purpose. Like, okay, so at least now I know you're doing it on purpose. So I need subtitles at home. I get it. All right, I'll live with that. Thank you that Dunkirk was basically a silent movie.
Well, if it's the director's intention to sort of highlight the music, I don't know why there's such a like problem with adding subtitles in theaters. Like, if that is truly the director's intention, right? To really, hey, I'm gonna highlight the music. It doesn't really matter what they're saying, but if you really want to know, I'll add the subtitles in theaters. Like, I don't know why that isn't being done more often. Like, I don't know if it's because it's being seen as like, oh, is it a bad mix? A mix, but I don't know. Yeah, but I don't know. But that's just a thought.
So, like I said, Interstellar is the one that addressed that in a negative way, but I accept it. It's okay, fine, you're doing it on purpose. Yeah. I got it. After all these other movies, I now see you're doing it on purpose. Fine, I'll live with it. If I have issues with it in the theater, when I buy it on digital media or home video or whatever, I'll watch it with subtitles and address my concerns there. But he fixed the biggest issue I had, because that's the problem I had with Inception. The emotional connection. I was already invested in the Batman story because it's freaking Batman. But all of those other movies, I felt like it's a great story. You're telling it fantastic. Ever since Memento, though, there hasn't been a movie where there was an emotional investment where I felt the emotion of the characters in their plight. So I never connected with Cobb's desire. I knew he wanted to see his children again. He was set up by his wife, so to speak. And he was desperate to get back to them, but I never felt it. Even though he had freaking Leonardo DiCaprio to convey the emotion, I did not feel it. So I'm like, I don't know if it was my bias about Leo or whatever. Mm. Like, I was just not, it wasn't jiving with me. And he was acting the hell out of that role, man. So I'm like, dude, this is great, but I don't feel it. Interstellar.
Right.
Without a doubt. His absolute most emotionally charged film, wept three separate times, and every time I watch it, including recently a week ago, always gets the tears flowing. And it has a lot to do, because if he failed at that emotional connection, that movie falls apart. He needed to drive home that love and gravity were synonymous. They transcend time. How is it that you can read a book that's been hundreds of years old and still get emotionally attached to it? Or even a message from a loved one a week, a month, or even a year ago and still feel like a tingly sensation in you? And you're trying to explain that love and gravity are the same and it transcends time because you can feel the emotion in real time, in the present, basically. That's why he addressed it. That's why Interstellar is my number one. He answered what I had issues with. He hit the hammer right on the head with nailing the most important flaw that I saw with him as a film director. And ever since then, like, dude, you can do whatever you want now. You did it. So the implicit bias in all this comes in the fact that I was also becoming a father. So my daughter was not yet born, but I felt a connection.
Yeah.
So now that she is born, it hits me even harder. So it's like, holy smokes. It takes the film to the absolute next level, which is why I can never unsee Interstellar.
Yeah.
It's only gotten better and better for me, just like his other movies. Because I recently watched Inception 2, and I finally started feeling the connection, because I kind of turned myself off to distract myself from the movie, got wholly invested. And I'm like, dude, Leo, you did really, really good here. It's like, I still didn't really feel it like in Interstellar, but at least I knew it was present now. Where I, before, I was like, dude, I don't feel diddly squat with you. So that's where it stands for me, man. Your list, as it stands, I just move Interstellar all the way to the top. Everything else remains the same. So my top three would be Interstellar, Inception, The Prestige. The Prestige being his very last truly Nolan movie with David Julian.
Right. I think I agree with like the Interstellar like your opinion that it's number one. You know, like, definitely Matthew McConaughey's character is way more you're way more invested in him than like Cobb, you know, because I feel like they're two different movies in sort of in a sense. Like, they're still both epics, but you know, Cobb is a sci-fi epic that has to, you know, have action beats, and like, whereas, you know, Interstellar is a way more, it's a huge film, but it's very focused. It's very focused on 1, 2, 3 characters, right?
Yeah.
Like, so obviously, and like you said, you know, you were becoming a father, and that movie was about a father, you know. And whereas, you know, I feel like Inception was his silhouette of like, oh, what is fatherhood and losing love, and what does that feel like? But you know, let's add explosions to it, and Interstellar was kind of like, now let's kind of dig into like that feeling like more, but still make a great and huge film out of it, you know, like.
Yeah.
That still go into a black hole and, you know, have crazy, sassy robots.
Yeah. Those robots were a big surprise for me. And Interstellar, like, dude, you guys have personality. Yeah, that's cool.
Actually, yeah, dude. Yeah, exactly. And I love that. I love that line. Like, can we turn it down to like 5 or something?
Yeah,
I thought that was a great line.
Like, oh, for my slaves in my robot colony.
Yeah, exactly.
Always gets me, man. Always gets me, because what we fear, right? The robots are going to, Skynet's going to take over.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, in summation,
I know it's happening already.
In summation of all this, because got to touch on a little bit on The Dark Knight and then eventually Tenet and what we expect on it, is he keeps the titles very simple, but the titles to his movies are the thesis for what he's showing you. Memento is a moment, and the entire film surrounds a moment and how it is shaped. Leonard Shelby, that moment changed him entirely, and he keeps living that moment. He can't escape it, which is awesome. Insomnia, you hit it right on the head, dude. This guy, when does the day end? it's like a 24-hour sun cycle. Like, holy smokes. And Batman, well, that go without saying, it's in the name. Batman Begins, The Dark Knight, and The Dark Knight Rises. It's telling you he's becoming the Bat. Okay, The Prestige, who is the magician? Nolan's the magician. He's telling you immediately, breaking down what a magic trick is, and then he is the magician when he's playing around with the characters that are played by Christian Bale. And Inception, what everybody talks about the most is that last moment before the screen cuts to black. The is it toppling or is it not? Everybody's arguing.
You gotta give Hans Zimmer the credit, the burn. Like, bro, I had that as my ringtone for so long, like, iconic, epic, bro, cultural.
Yeah, yeah, and everybody.
No matter what, like, film culture.
Leave Zimmer alone.
After that, what? Like, all the trailers had that little burn.
So everybody. Cool.
I didn't want to let go of it. It took me forever to change.
Right. But that moment, though, that singular moment that sparked endless conversations and theories about who's right and who's wrong, and Nolan, even like a week or two ago, in an interview, refuses to acknowledge it. I'm like, by what he did, he basically
that's
solved
awesome. Yeah,
what
that's...
I've been saying ever since the movie ended, because I think we watched it together too, where I said, because it's like, first off, the question was, okay, now that we saw Inception, what do you see him doing next? Oh, the next one's The Dark Knight. The next one's The Dark Knight Rises, and he needs to have Bane, Catwoman, and Penguin. That's what I said. That Penguin brings in Bane, and Catwoman is like on both sides of the aisle. And instead of having Penguin, it was It was Daggett, John Daggett. I never saw him bringing a TV show character into the thing.
Yeah.
But I was right. Yeah. You know, it was like everything was right. So anyway, I said with Inception, the trick here was he explained the concept and he did it to the audience because we were all arguing. Was it a dream? Was it not a dream? Or is it somewhere in the middle? Did anything really happen? I'm like, you think you're thinking about that by yourself? He made you think it. He made you think everything. He incepted you.
Yeah.
Because that's exactly his title. His titles are the thesis of what he's showing. Interstellar, he took you into the stars. The wormhole, the black hole.
Inception, you got incepted. Yeah.
You got incepted at Inception. He said he was taking us to Dunkirk. He took us to Dunkirk. It's amazing, especially hearing a veteran from that battle coming out saying, that's exactly how it was for me. I'm like, awesome. So then that leads us to Tenet, which in of it itself isn't saying much. But what he's toying around with, where even the cast doesn't even know how to explain it. They don't know how to explain it. So it's like it's a James Bond thing with time shift. So it's not time travel. It's time shift. It's like, what are these? Bullet holes? No, they haven't happened yet. Like, wait, what? You're looking at it. So, okay, what are we talking about now? Where are we in time? It's about, like, Tenet is, what is it called? A palindrome? Something like that, where it's like a symmetrical. Doesn't matter. You write it forward, you write it backwards. It spells the same thing.
And oh, okay.
I think that's what he's conveying here. That the past and the future are both present. So you're living in a presence of the convergence of the two. That's how I'm dissecting it. I have not seen anything beyond the first trailer. I don't want to see anything beyond the trailer. I don't want to hear a freaking interview. That thing comes on the theater. I will be there. COVID, no COVID. I'm there. Because this dude demands my respect. And hell yeah, I'll be there to support him. Come hell or high water, I will be there.
Yeah, bro, just bring your mask. You're good.
Let's just go. Let's get inoculated. I don't care. Let's go.
Bro, yeah. Dude, like, you don't want people to be crowded on you, like, when you're watching a movie anyway. Like, trust me, a movie is so much better when you have, like, space around you. Like, please, give me my 6 feet, okay? Like,
stop kicking the back of my seat, right?
Yeah, no. Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm going to be there for sure, like you said. IMAX 70mm, like, He does great work with that format, and I wish more people, more directors did, to be honest.
Yeah.
My thoughts for Tenet, honestly, like you said, I saw both trailers, and it's like you said, it does have that sort of, like, what has happened is happening, or what already happened will happen, like. Right. It kind of reminds me, like, I don't know, I don't want to dive too into what I think how it's going to end, because I'm probably going to be, like, really, really wrong.
I'm super excited to see how
he's going to, but that's the thing, is like, with that, with Nolan's trailers, like, it's so hard to even, like, guess what really the movie is about, which I love, because, you know, you don't want everything spoiled, like, in a trailer, but, like, okay. You said, I'm going to wait. And then definitely, I'm super excited to watch it. And you know what? This might be Inception 2.0, 3.5. I don't know.
It has to be, dude. I'm like, it's right? Been 10 years.
Because like, I can't see him doing anything less than what he did in Inception. You know, like, I can only see him wanting to top what he did. Like, oh, you jumped off a bunker in like in the middle of winter and it exploded. Well. Maybe I have something different for you this time, and maybe it's a mountain and not a bunker. I don't know. I'm like, that's what I love about Nolan. Like, his imagination really, like, lends to, really, like, makes you imagine, really makes you use your imagination, but in the best way possible, not in a very sort of, like, indirect, lazy way. It's, like, something that feeds you, that, like, encourages you almost, you know? Yeah, so honestly... As you can see, I'm like super excited.
Yeah, I think he's doing it on purpose. As I told you, Memento came out in 2000, Inception 2010, Tenet, which looks to take it to the next level, it's 2020. So I think he's hitting beats on
10 years. That's so crazy. I still can't believe Inception is 10 years, bro.
Oh, dude, I know.
That's crazy. That's insane.
I never get tired of that hallway sequence, man. Every time it leads up to it. Normally, when you watch a movie, depending on the length, usually around the 45-minute to a 1 hour mark, it's when it hits like its main,
Action
like
scene,
it's
yeah.
either an action beat or a plot twist that sets up the third act. No,
Yeah.
and here's the thing: the most
Right.
expensive actor was Leonardo DiCaprio. He's remembered for being in it, but he's not the guy that did the scene. It's Joseph Gordon-Levitt, and the thing is, there's another stunt guy that we should all give
But you know
credit
what?
to.
He has to get something out of it because his whole line, all his lines were just explaining the movie. So it's like, all right, bro, let's give him
Yeah, but
the
it was a break. It
action
was breakout for Tom Hardy, because that's what like, dude, who is this guy? He's eloquent, articulate. This is after he did
Yeah.
Bronson, I think. So this dude is like, all right, man, you're propelled to stardom.
Bronson is a great film. Yeah. Hell yeah. Love it.
I only seen parts of it. I gotta see the full thing for sure.
Did Russell and I forget to talk about the Dark Knight movies? Absolutely not. We just went on a very long discussion about them. So that's its own episode. Stay tuned for that one and tune in next time to The Critic Corner.